You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Kyle Porter, the victor, the man who called his shot. I am merely Chip Patterson. And listen, from a, like, we are going to have Sean Martin on later this week, and I'm sure that y'all are going to have plenty of Patrick Cantlay takes. You, Kyle, I know for sure you've been on Patrick Cantlay on this podcast for a couple years, and you even said in your predict the perfect finish, you even said, I will be running laps celebrating Patrick Cantlay's win. So you called your shot. How did it, do you feel vindicated watching Patrick Cantlay just march down Martin Kaymer, Adam Scott, and the rest of the top of the leaderboard on Sunday at Memorial?
Well, Chip, you know, I sort of take it one pick at a time, and, you know, I try not to get ahead of myself. And, you know, I think this is like the second pick that I've gotten right in the last 7 years. So it feels good. It's like winning on the PGA Tour. It's really hard.
I thought you were going to give me like a Tiger Woods. I played really good today.
You're
like,
I played so good today.
I picked really good this week.
I remember my, so like when I first started doing this, I had no clue what I was doing, to be honest. And we did picks for Tournament of Champions. It was like the first tournament that I did. This was like beginning of 13, and I picked DJ cause I'm like, I don't know, whatever. And DJ wins. And my dad was like, wow, you seem good at this. This seems easy for you. And then I didn't get one right for like 3 more years. It's so hard. I mean, it's difficult. There's a lot of value in golf because there's so many different things at play. There's so many variables. I think that creates value, but when you just have to pick one person every week, it's really difficult.
But what did, let's start right there at Cantlay, because here's what I've seen from Patrick Cantlay is a lot of play that has shown basically in the last, what, year and a half? Like, would we say most of the 2018 season, maybe even late 2017, he starts to get things moving really in the right direction. And it's at major championships. It's at the WGCs. It's at the big tournaments against the best players. He is putting himself in contention. How much value do you put in him turning what has been regular contention into a victory here? And like, right back to a conversation from last week, you know, does this change much for Patrick Cantlay?
No, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I think winning is certainly a big deal, and I think it's obviously a big deal to win Memorial. It's a big time. It's one of the biggest non-majors of the year. But for me, it's just like it was always going to happen. Like it's just like this is the tournament that got in the way of Patrick Cantlay, you know?
Oh, hey, I was going to say, because I didn't want to give my answer before asking the questions, but this doesn't change much for me for Patrick Cantlay. And that's, you know, not to diminish what he was able to do here, but he's sick. Like, he can run off 5 birdies in 7 holes. He's just got that kind of game right now. And when you've got such a long-range view of what a young player can be, I just don't find, like, the fact that he was able to, you know, hit 19 in a tournament where, you know, you had a bunch of other really good players. But, I mean, it wasn't like he just was in the final pairing with DJ and beat him, right? Like, it would take a different kind of win against different competition at the top for me to have some great landscape adjustment on where I see Patrick Cantlay.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? There was only 8 guys that were 10 strokes gain or better at Memorial. So 8 guys that were in double digits in strokes gain. And Cantlay almost hit 20. He was 19.2 strokes gained. And you're like, man, I mean, if you're Adam Scott, you're looking around, you're like, what? And he did this. There was a great moment. I think he was on 15 where Adam Scott, he makes his second birdie in a row. He looks at the leaderboard and he's just like, like in his head, you can tell he's saying like, what the hell? Like what do I have to do here to beat this guy? So the 64 was obviously impressive, but you know, look, like Cantlay's ranked 8th in the world now. So he finished 2018. He was 18th in the world and now he's ranked 8th. And I think that his talent is somewhere between those two numbers. Like I don't know that he's a number one guy in the world. Maybe I don't know if he he's the kind of guy where like if he is, I don't think he would be there that long. Kind of like a Keimer where you're like, oh, he won, you know, 3 big events in 2 years and he ended up number 2 or 1 or whatever in the world. But I think he's between like the 8th and 18th best player on the planet. And he's still not a name. I mean, he might be the least famous of the top, you know, whatever, 15 players in the world.
So, all right, is he a star or a superstar?
Yeah, that's interesting, right? Because he's got 2 wins, but in my head, he's got like 7.
Yeah, I'm going firmly star. Just because he's been crushing it at Shriners, I throw that out. Whenever anyone, any golfer has single event dominance, I judge them so unfairly and disregard that from the data set.
Well, yeah, I think this is hard. Can I go stat of the day on you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I got this at the end of the show, but I kind of want to bring it up now. So I'm going to go stat of the day on you. Okay. So Patrick Cantlay, he's only had 77 starts as a pro. So he set out most of 14, all of 15, and all of 16, and just sort of re-entered in 17 when he won. So he set out basically 14, 15, 16 with a back injury. His caddy died like while he was with him. I mean, just some really bad stuff. And in his first 77 starts on the PGA Tour, he's got 10 top fives and 2 wins. Now, I tried to find a comp for that. Like give me some context here. Well, if you look at Ricky Fowler's career, first 77 starts on the PGA Tour, I think he had 11 top fives and 1 win. So he's basically having Fowler's sort of early career. He's having it at an older age because he had to sit out for so long. So maybe you discount it a little because he's a little bit more mature as a person. But for me, I go star just because I don't think he has. I mean, it's the same question for me: is Xander a star or superstar? Like superstar to me means you're winning multiple majors. And not only that, but you have sort of the character, not even personality, but just like you're the sort of character that's a superstar. Like DJ doesn't have a great personality, right? But he plays the character. And so because of that and because of his talent, he's a superstar. Koepka is obviously a superstar. Rory, Spieth. I think Fowler's an interesting one. Is he a star or superstar? He gets attention like he's a superstar, but I think he's actually just a star. And I think Cantlay's sort of in that category.
I decided after one of last week's shows, I think I didn't want to dwell on it because we were probably had a lot to get to on the dock, but you used a phrase last week, character development, and I think it might be the theme of the summer.
I don't mean
character development this week.
Yeah, I don't mean like, does he do the good or do the bad? I mean like the almost like the caricature development of these different personalities.
Right. It's the story arcs. It's us trying to figure out how all the different pieces interact with each other. And so to your point, I agree. Star, Xander, star, Fowler, superstar.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, And again, like your talent, I don't think your talent or your performance has to match up with what your character development is.
So I draw the line for both those in that you stack them up against superstars because you can be like, all right, DJ, Rory, Spieth, I think JT, superstar.
Yeah, for sure. Who out of those three, who's better at golf between Xander, Patrick Cantlay, and Ricky Fowler? Who would you say this is? Let's go play 10,000 holes. Who's going to win?
Ricky Fowler.
I think I might go Cantlay. I mean, sure. Recency bias, whatever. I just, I think that the injury really affected everything. His pedigree is sick. I mean, his pedigree is Matthew Wolf-like. I mean, it is. It would be like if Wolf played for a year and then went away because he got injured, and then 3 years later we're like, oh yeah, Matthew Wolf was unbelievable.
But was Wolf a later on the amateur circuit player? Because I always thought the book on Cantlay was that, you know, even prior to, like, in his college career, he won everything you could win as a elite college golfer. But didn't he even hold one of those, like, guys have had their eyes on Patrick Cantlay since, you know, he was young, like teenager type stuff?
I think so. That's going to be a Sean Martin question. I don't go deeper than like the college days.
No. Like I want to say that I've heard that he was the number one, he was one of the top amateurs even at like the, you know, U8, U15, U16 circuits.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds right. But I don't know. I don't know. That does sound right though.
Mm. So what? All right. Anything else from the memorial?
Well, so one more thing I can't lay. The way that he, I thought the way he played the par fives on the back was unbelievable. I mean, he hit two shots that almost hit the flag on both of those par fives. I guess one of them did. The other didn't. But he made two birdies on the par fives on the back. The total length of those putts was 13 inches. Two birdies on the par five. So he almost eagled both of them. And then the pitch out on 18 out of the sand, he throws it up to the back of the green. You have to trust so many different things on that shot, feeds it back down, makes an 8-footer. And it was just like, I mean, it was a clinic. It was sick. I mean, it was really impressive. And you know, the way that Keimer and Scott had really, really good tournaments, and Cantlay just dusted them. I mean, it was all Cantlay on the back. So I thought that was pretty impressive. I mean, so Adam Scott led the field in strokes gained tee to green. Hideki Matsuyama was fourth, and Scott beat him by 6 strokes tee to green. Hideki's fourth in the field, and Scott clipped him by 6. He shot a 68 in the final pairing on Sunday and got beat by 2. How does that happen?
Well, I mean, because Patrick Cantlay shoots a 64.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying, I think Scott's got to be looking around saying, like, what do I have to do to win a golf tournament?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not wavering on Adam Scott. I thought this was a terrific extra piece of the puzzle of what we've seen to be a real boost of confidence here in the last, like, Adam Scott and Martin Keimer are playing together. You walk away from Martin Keimer being like, well, that was fun. See you in 2.5 years. And you walk away from Adam Scott being like, all right, I would think that Adam Scott has a chance to finish in the top 10 at Pebble.
See you in 2.5 years. Adam Scott at the last 3 U.S. Opens, cut, and T18.
Well, hold on. I said last year or so, right? Was T18 last year?
T18 was 2016.
Oh, damn.
Okay, what else? Spieth, can I still be out?
Yeah.
I was in on Friday, and I'm out again. I just, well, first of all, okay, here's the first thing. Don't get me wrong. Like, I love watching it. It's the best. He looks like he is playing. He looks like he's playing the wrong golf course, and he shoots a 69. Like, some of the shots he hits, you're like, are you okay, bro? Like, are we good? And he shoots 69, 70, you know, 68, whatever.
But then that 73, that Sunday scoring average came back to bite him in the ass.
Well, and yeah, it did. And here's the thing. This is why, and Sunday was kind of key for me in terms of Pebble. He said afterwards that he's like on the, you know, feels good to be on the rise or whatever. He finished like 62nd on approach shots. He is not locked in with the irons. I mean, we can talk about, you know, how he was 10th in tee to green or whatever. You know why that was? Because he chipped in like 4 times. And maybe, I mean, that is part of the deal with him. But again, I just go back to 2017, number one in the world in strokes gained on approach shots. He is the best iron player on the planet, and he finished 62nd in the field at Memorial. Now, part of that was Ryan Ladner pointing this out. He had a bad Sunday. I mean, obviously, but he had a bad Sunday with his irons, and so he didn't hit many greens, and so you're losing a lot there. I want to see more out of the iron play before I pick you up at Pebble at a U.S. Open. I mean, if you're missing greens at a U.S. Open, you're going to make doubles and triples.
On Friday after the round, weren't you talking about the Spieth good, Spieth doing the good, and what it might mean for Pebble?
I know. I'm
you're a mess.
I am. I'm more of a mess than he is, I think.
Kyle Porter and his analysis of Jordan Spieth is as volatile as Jordan Spieth in his actual game.
Well, I know.
The truth is probably somewhere between these extremes, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not as bad as it seems in terms of the smoke and mirrors, but it's also not so good that we've got to expect he's going to be able to string together a 60, 66, 69, 71, 68 and win. I don't see those four rounds in full consistency, like that kind of lineup. And I know we're going to be doing the 2010 Pebble look back later on in the show, but like when you just look at the numbers lined up, I just don't see Jordan Spieth with that kind of a run at Pebble this year.
Yeah. No, I agree. I regret a lot of things from Friday.
What we saw from Tiger Woods plus that Pebble leaderboard look back right after this.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, so we made.
Hold on. Okay, so Spieth, round one, he didn't fit. So every round he didn't finish, and I just ignored this on Friday. He didn't finish better than 30th in the field on approach shots. He's not striking the ball that well. He drove it better,
right?
Chipped it great. I mean, around the greens he was unbelievable, but the approach shots are just. Anyway, we don't need to keep going. Let's go Tiger.
Tiger, as we mentioned, pretty epic post-round on CBS, talking to Amanda Baliones about what was just a super fun ride of a Sunday around Muirfield Village.
I hit it really well.
I hit it really well.
I played really well. Did you see it?
I was watching live.
Did you see his smirk when he realized what he was about to say?
Yes.
It was so good. It was the most like self-aware, I guess is the right terminology, that I've seen him, where in his head he's like, well, I know how this is going to come across. And yet he said it anyway, like he was sort of in on the joke. It was great. I loved it. It was so funny. And man, I could not, like, that's what I needed to see from Tiger. He finishes 11th from tee to green, 9th in approach shots. And he hit the ball really well all week. And more than that, like, his swing just looked good. It looked easy. It looked smooth. It didn't, I mean, and this is the deal for me. Like, I looked at this thing after the PGA, and you're like, okay. I mean, I kind of joked about this on Twitter, but you're looking at it and you're going, is he just going to, I mean, was the Masters just the thing? And then he's just going to just kind of coast into the sunset. And I know that, like, that sounds ridiculous to say out loud, but the amount of effort and work he has to put into all of this, it's so hard. I mean, it's just so much. And after PGA, you're like, ugh, I mean, what's this going to be over the next couple of years? And so for him to come down from that PGA, or come down from the Masters high, and, you know, bounce back after the PGA. Like, I said this on Friday, like, I think this tournament is sort of, it's what he is.
Statistically, Tiger was pretty good.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, couldn't, and here's the thing. He improved every day. Going back to, I think it was Wavner had this tweet just about his approach shots. Like, he got better and better every day. He got more and more comfortable every day. And so this is sort of grading against the take that you and I had around the PGA of like, oh, he doesn't need to play. And I don't want to walk that back too much, because I don't think he needs to play very much, but I do think he, like, the competitive rounds every once in a while are beneficial to just keeping his game at major championship level.
Bryson DeChambeau, Tiger's buddy and playing partner for the first 2 days. This was not a great round for him, and a continuation of, you know, is BAD, BDC, Lay Artiste? Is he lost? You know, is he lost in his own head? Is he lost in his own calculations? He gets put on the clock. What'd you make about his complaints?
I mean, the problem with his complaints is that the way that he addresses them is by acting like he's smarter than everybody else.
Right.
Which is not a good position to take, right? Like, so here's what he said. He goes, people call me slow. I call myself quick with the stuff I do. Okay. A lot of guys out here, they just see it and they hit it. And for me, I don't want to do that because I feel like there's other variables that I get hurt on. Well, guess what? Maybe you should try doing that, because you don't have a top 10 in a major yet. And there's, you know, a couple of guys that do that and they've won a bunch of majors.
Right. Well, you're never going to win an argument making the other person feel dumb. I feel like that's like almost if you just try and say, I'm right because I'm smarter, so there. That's like a very, very quick way to lose any chance of reaching common ground with the person you are trying to convince.
Tiger had a great quote. This is from Golf Channel. Will Gray wrote this. Tiger said, so Tiger and Bryson were playing together. He said, it's one of those things where it's a group effort to try to get back in position, which is basically like, I feel like his way of throwing Bryson under the bus. The group ahead of us, JT doesn't take a lot of time. Rory plays quick, and Jordan, and he goes, was 7-under through 13 holes. So they're obviously playing fast. I mean, I don't know. Bryson keeps making this argument, and he made it later on in this article. He said the time to hurry is between shots. It's not over the shot. I do think there's a little something to that. Like, but you can't, I mean, you can only make up so much ground, literally, when you're walking after you take a minute and a half to hit a shot. Are you going to run to the green? Like, I don't know. Like, if you're that smart, then do the calculations on your way there, bro. You know?
Are you out on Bryson right now just for a while?
I'm not out, like, in terms of going back to the, like, character thing, of just a phenomenal character. Just so much content. I love it. But, like, I don't know.
All right, and now it's time for our leaderboard look back of the week. As I mentioned, we're going to be looking back at the 2010 U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. Notable for Dustin Johnson and his 82. Dustin Johnson had himself in position. Dustin Johnson could have made a playoff if he had shot a 77 on the final round. He shot a 66 on Saturday, but he shot an 82 at Pebble Beach. This is an incredible leaderboard to look back on right now.
This is one of my favorite things to do, to look back on these boards. Did you, should this deter me from picking DJ at Pebble?
No.
I'm scared. I'm concerned. No joke.
No, listen, concerns. I got you. This is so many software updates and hard drive reboots ago for Dustin Johnson. Like, the DJ operating system has been reworked, rewired, and rebooted 3 times. Seriously. Like major life sort of altering stuff and career altering stuff. So much has happened in the last 9 years. Like, would you be a little bit nervous if you're picking DJ and DJ goes low on Saturday, then on Sunday things start to get a little rocky? Yes. Like, there might be some ghosts out there, but I don't think that that's enough for you to just, like, totally bail on him as being someone who is very, very well suited to win this championship.
You're gonna, if that's the case, he's in the final pairing on Sunday. You're gonna see me on national television on Fox, just hollering in the background. Cover up his score. Don't tell him what his score is. That's gonna be on Fox.
Well, all right. So
Shane Bacon's gonna have to go to break.
So in this on this leaderboard, Graham McDowell was the winner. For those who might not remember, he won at even par. 74. Gregory Hevray,
yeah. The pride of France.
But then we've got, you know, some faces that are going to be very much in the conversation. Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods both finished T4. Matt Kuchar finished T6. You mentioned Dustin Johnson lands at T8. Our friend Martin Keimer from this past weekend also up in the mix. What were some of the, like, I don't specifically remember where Tiger and DJ both went low on Saturday, but I don't remember where, like, Tiger and Phil and Ernie Els were all sitting as things were concluding on Sunday.
Well, the two things that stick out to me is DJ goes out up 3 on McDowell to start the day, and I think he was up 5 on his next closest guy. Hold on, let me pull it up. I probably should have this pulled up since we're talking about it. So he was up 3 on McDowell, and he's up 6 on – no, he's up 5 on Tiger going into Sunday. So Tiger is in the second-to-last group, or second-to-last pairing. And Tiger bogeys the first and then plays the rest of his round in – 3 over. He shot a, what did he shoot? He shot a 75 in the final round. Not good. Tiger, if Tiger shoots 72 on Sunday, he's in a playoff. How about that?
Mm-hmm. That's what I was.
But DJ goes triple. Wait, did he triple the first? He goes par, starts with a par, and then he goes triple, double, bogey. So he goes from 3 up to 3 down in 4 holes. I mean, how fast is your head spinning? Like, where are you at in just mentally right there?
Gone.
Standing on the fifth tee.
Yeah, gone.
Do you remember that too? It was like the image that I have in my head is I can't remember what hole it was. I assume it was the one he tripled, of him like standing up like on top of this like just long brush, like trying to hack out like over the Pacific Ocean, and you're like, well, this isn't going well. Do you remember that?
Man,
there's a great shot of him. I'll have to go find it, but yeah, I mean, the thing that really struck me, I was looking back at some of the scores. There were 768s in the tournament. There were no 67s. And then Tiger and DJ shot 66 in the third round, both of them. And then Phil also shot 66. He did it in the second round. So there were some just fireworks from those three early on in the event. Ty Tryon was in this tournament. How about that?
Who is that?
Ty Tryon was like a, he was sort of this kid like out of Florida that I think he was out of Florida who was going to like take on Tiger. Like he was like in that wave of guys that you're like, oh, this guy can, you know, next Tiger. And we do the thing where it's like, right. Like we did it with Spieth. Who's the next Spieth? You're like, Spieth 25. What are we talking about? And he was just a superstar. As an amateur, as a teenager. So he played in this event. Pablo Martin, Oklahoma State, he was in this event. He finished last. He shot 27 over to finish like 70th, 73rd or something like that.
Good for him. Hanging in there. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a unique year for Dustin Johnson, but also because the conditions were so tough. Like, The 27 over par doesn't even like stun you when you see it, right?
No, not at all. Not at a US Open. Okay, so Tryon, I couldn't remember the age. He turned pro at the age of 16. As an amateur in 2001, he made it into the Honda Classic. Third youngest player to ever make the cut at a PGA Tour event. He was 16. At age 17, he made it, he got his card. He made his way through three levels of elimination events to become the youngest player to earn exempt status at Q school. But he did not hold on to PGA Tour status. Anyway, he was just a phenom as a teenager.
I'd forgotten about the lost ball for DJ.
What hole was that on?
I think it was the third.
Mm.
In another speedy pass, the ball resulted in a wild, unrestrained hook. That's from the New York Times at the time. That flew left, and then more left until it disappeared in the direction of the 16th green. No one, apparently including hundreds of spectators at the hole, saw where Johnson's drive came down. Even a general approximation of its final location seemed difficult, and Johnson and his caddy looked in several spots. The rules permit a golfer to look for 5 minutes. That went quickly. Forced to declare it lost, Johnson began to walk back to the tee to hit again, but about 20 steps and not more than 20 seconds after declaring it lost, a fan found the ball, but the rule was that it was too late.
That's tough. You know who I think his caddy was at the time?
Tim Mickelson.
I think he was Joe Lacava.
Oh, wow. Tiger's caddy.
Pretty sure. Yeah, I think that's right.
Goodness. Man, I do not let the haunting memories of that dissuade you, because again, Dustin Johnson, it's not just that he was baby faced with long sideburns and now has a beard. He's grown a lot in that time.
Yeah, no, he has. Sorry, I'm looking up this Joe Lacava thing. So Lacava left DJ in 2011. So yeah, I think he would have been with him at that time, right before Austin got his protractor out and started doing the work on the bag.
Hey, we love Austin.
What else we got? What else we need to talk about?
Let me see.
Qualifying?
Oh,
some names.
Oh, on the qualifying's going on right now, right?
Yeah, qualifying's on Monday. I just wrote down names that intrigue me. Max Homa is trying to qualify. You got Stuart Hagestad, who is the guy that finished low am at the Masters a couple years ago.
Bobby Clampett.
59-year-old Bobby Clampett and 18-year-old Cole Hammer are in the same qualifier. Golf's the best. Zach Blair, Matt Parziali, who's the firefighter out of Massachusetts that qualified for the Masters a couple years ago. There's a bunch of 17-year-olds. I can't ever say his name. Ashkai Do you remember the guy that played in the Valspar?
No.
You said his name, so I didn't have to.
Did I say it correctly?
Yeah, the left-hander, Akshay Bhatia. He's 17 years old. He's out of I think he's out of North Carolina.
Akshay Bhatia.
No, he's out of California. I'm all over the place. Sean, I'm going to get a lot of texts from Sean Martin about this.
100%. Well, I mean, the power went out in the content shed in the middle of this. Flustered.
Yeah,
this
I'm actually sweating and reeling. It's not good.
Like Dustin Johnson on Sunday. What does it feel like? It feels like Kyle in the content shed after the power goes out mid-podcast and he's tethered to his phone trying to get it in. You're just trying to get it in at 77 to make a playoff. The announcers are wondering if you'll hit 80.
I'm trying to get it in like 89 degrees in the shed right now. It's not good.
How's everyone inside the house?
I don't know. They might have left. I can't see in there right now. U.S. Women's Open. You want to end on that?
Like from Jong-un Lee 6 in terms of the...
You nailed it. That was better than my Akshay Bhatia.
Jong-un Lee 6. The Lee 6 is a... It'll catch your eye for sure when you find out that is the winner of the U.S. Women's Open. I was nonplussed by the fact that one of the biggest stories to come out of the U.S. Open Women's Open was Hank Haney just deciding that this is my time to really speak my mind.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's not great. I got a text from somebody that said something like, so Haney doubles down and triples down later, just firing off tweets. And you're like, okay, well, I don't know if this is the best route to take, but I got a text from somebody that said, did you see the person who asked him, did you really think people were worried about like the prediction part of this? Like it's almost like he was like justifying everything by saying he was right about how it played out. And you're like, yeah, that's not the part that anybody cared about, was your prediction of who wins, you know? And it didn't come off very well.
Well, do you have a sense of like what the dynamics are that we're playing with? Like, is he old man shouting at clouds, or is this like, is there any bit of grounded for real analysis or undercurrent here that is pushing him way off the edge?
No, here's what I think is sort of at play is like when you don't, and I've experienced this. I shouldn't talk because I just couldn't pronounce the names of the people that I'm trying to talk about on this podcast. But when you're not prepared, like when you don't prepare very well and you get asked about something that you don't know anything about, like what's your first feeling on that? Like you feel embarrassed or you feel, frustrated, whatever. This is like a deep dive into like psychoanalyzing somebody I don't know. But I think a lot of times, like when that happens, you run to like humor, right? To like deflect. And it's almost like he just like ran to like this, you know, the first joke that he could think of. And the reality is that like, he just didn't know anything about the U.S. Women's Open.
Right.
Right. And so, okay, well, that's fine, but don't have a better preparation that either you're going to talk about it or you're not going to talk about it. And it just seemed like they went to it and that was his first reaction, is just to make a joke about it.
And then, like you mentioned, to double down and to say I'm right, so like tries to give some legitimacy to what was probably initially like a 25% effort.
Yeah, that's not the play.
Right.
Like the play is not to say, see, I nailed it. I mean, I just did that with Patrick Cantlay, but that's a little different.
Yeah, no, but you have put in the time on Patrick Cantlay. That's the big difference.
Speaking of the U.S. Women's Open, I To be honest, I didn't watch a ton of it. I saw a little bit. The course looked amazing. I did a little bit of research before it started. Noah and Up went there and they got some great footage of it. It's a Seth Rayner course. A little bit outside of my world in terms of like golf architecture, but it looked, you know, Andy Johnson's whole thing, Friday Andy Johnson, his whole thing with courses like this are you can dial it up and get it going like fast. And when it's fast and when it's playing firm, you don't have to have like the tricked up rough and, you know, all these different things that we see at some of these majors, specifically from the USGA. You can just have it playing really crisp and really difficult. And so we saw at Pinehurst, right? Yeah. With the U.S. Open there? It wasn't a great U.S. Open because Keimer won by 50, but in terms of the way a golf course should play, that's it. And that's what you saw at Charleston over the weekend.
Anything else? We'll be back tomorrow, and then Sean Martin again coming in on Wednesday.
How many belt loops do you think Tiger has on his pants? This is something that I got called out for this. Like, bro, fixate on something else. Look, I'm watching PGA Tour Live like 9 hours a day. I don't have anything else to fixate on. This is what I'm dialed into. And I started thinking, I wonder if Tiger has as many a belt loop for every major. A
lot of time with Jonathan Coachman on the PGA Tour Live call. I think Tiger Woods had... I think that he has 9 aside. I think he has 18 belt loops. Two, three, four. Real talk. I would guess it. I would set the over under of Tiger Woods belt loops on those pairs of pants that you shouted out on Twitter at 12.5.
It looks crazy. It looks insane. Like how does that? I don't know. It made me laugh. Like I laughed many times when I saw it over the weekend.
All right, let's release you from the content shed and back into air.
Thank you. I'm about to pass out.
Yeah, we're about to have protective services come and charge me from keeping you in there. You can follow him on Twitter at @KylePorterCBS. You can follow me @Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.